Today, of course, our service is inspired by the high holy days and holidays of Judaism. And I'm glad to invite fellowship member Jacqueline Cotman to offer the opening reflection today.
Fall is a season of invitation and ritual. Trees are invited to change into glorious colors and offer up crisp apples ready to be covered in caramel or dipped in honey. Schools open their doors, inviting teachers and students back into classrooms. Congregations shift back into regular schedules of services and RE classes. Stadiums open their stands and invite people in for a whole different kind of worship. And for those observing the high holy days, the fall season invites us to look inward, to let go, to begin again with renewed promise. The bookends of the most important time of the Jewish calendar are Rosh Hashanah, the new year, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. The Torah says that on Rosh Hashanah, which was last Monday, God opens the book of life and spends the next 10 days inscribing all your deeds from the past year before sealing it on Yom Kippur, which is this coming Wednesday. So, given this very traditional significance, and as an agnostic Unitarian growing up in a UU household that observed both Jewish and Christian traditions, I was surprised to find that the High Holy Days were my favorite time of year. They may not be as glamorous as Christmas or as delicious as Passover, but even as a kid, there was something about setting aside time to think hard about who I had been and everything I had done, for better or worse, over the past year, that made me feel ready to take on the year ahead. The timing for making resolutions made sense to me, since fall felt more like the beginning of a new year than the middle of winter. And the intention of the holiday never changed. It was always joyous, always serious, always difficult, and always felt really good. As I got into middle school, I found myself drawn more deeply into this time of year. I even started staying home from school on Yom Kippur to spend a day thinking, praying, and meditating, and trying out different traditions of the holiday to find the ones most meaningful to me. Attending services at the temple with my grandparents, being part of a discussion group at our UU congregation, making lists of the people I needed to apologize to, my younger brothers always seeming to play a prominent role, and then challenging myself to do the scary thing of asking for their forgiveness, going on a Tashlik walk with my mom, where we walked with breadcrumbs in our pockets to a river near our house and threw them into the water to symbolize throwing out all of our bad words and actions and baggage from the past year, and fasting, something Jewish people have done for thousands of years on Yom Kippur as a grumbly and even painful reminder of the hard spiritual work of the season. I loved that the High Holy Days couldn't be commercialized. It's hard to send a greeting card for Yom Kippur. Happy atoning! And that, at their core, they still mean what they always have for generations. I loved the sound of them, the piercing call of the ram's horn shofar, the beauty of the chants and songs, the mournful half-step at the beginning of the Kol Nidre that seemed like a musical apology that everyone who heard it was making together. I loved the feeling of them, the way that, even though I didn't believe in the God mentioned in the Torah passages and readings, there was still room for me in these holidays to connect with that quiet, deep place at the core of who I am, to interpret this time of turning as turning in toward myself. At the heart of all those traditions is a really tough assignment. The High Holy Days are a challenge to us to grapple with the spaces between whom we have been in the past year and who we hope to be in the year ahead. They are a time of atonement, of apology for words said and unsaid, things done and undone, promises kept and unkept to ourselves and others. And they're a time of forgiveness and renewal, a promise to strive to better ourselves in the year ahead. As we light the High Holy Day candles along with the chalice to open our service this morning, we give thanks for being together in this place, for the invitation to look inward, to let go, and to allow ourselves to begin again in love.
Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, shehekianu v'kiemanu v'higianu lazman hazeh.
Blessed are you, Spirit of life, for giving us life, for sustaining us, and for enabling us to reach this season. Amen.
In my life, beginning again seems to get harder with each year that passes. It's not because I have been particularly punished in this area. I have been forgiven before, sometimes for transgressions that are not minor. I have even been able to offer forgiveness to those close to me who asked for it, and that has been an unexpectedly major gift. Forgiving and being forgiven are both prominent themes of the Jewish High Holy Days. Yet that glorious feeling of having wiped the slate clean eludes me more and more as the pages of my calendars turn and turn again. The murkiness, I think, isn't because I'm souring with age, at least I hope not. No comments, please. Rather, I think that it's hard to get that clean slate feeling, because whether for good or ill, I've become wise enough to know that no matter how sorry I am, or even how much I've learned from a mistake, I will undoubtedly mess up again. And so will you. So will everyone. Examples of the endless cycle of letting go and beginning again abound. I know I will always be catching up and falling behind in reading and responding to email. I don't feel good about this. I love the email I get at the fellowship. It's one of the main ways that I connect with friends, with members, with potential friends and members during the week, whether big life news is being reported, crucial congregational business is transacted, or simply that friendly hellos are exchanged. I owe many of you a heartfelt apology for not being as prompt in my written replies as I am in my heart. Recently, I got my email inbox down to 4 messages. But now I'm behind once more. I will catch up again. I know this isn't the end of the world. But when I get to that promised land of not owing anyone an urgent reply, instead of perfecting my victory dance, I'll probably sigh and just shrug in recognition that my relief is as temporary as life itself, as fleeting as an empty email inbox. But what about the big stuff? Have you read the news lately? I'm not proud to admit this, but when news of the flood of Syrian refugees and their plight began making headlines this round, I thought to myself very calmly, this is horrible. These people are in my prayers, yet I cannot keep company with every terror and tragedy. I'm busy at work and at home. I'm more deeply involved than I sometimes wish in local matters. I deserve protection from some of the worst. Then a Facebook friend posted a photograph of the migrant toddler who washed up dead on the beach in Turkey. Did you see that? Aylin was about the same age as my littlest guy at home, and there was his tiny body being carried by a soldier who averted his eyes as those sweet little toddler legs dangled lifelessly from his arms. Can we even talk about beginning again in light of the inexcusably preventable death of a child for whom there will be no more beginnings, no more agains? This is not a rhetorical question, not for me and not for Judaism. Later, I have a little spark of inspiration that I'll share. It's a profound story about someone who believes that being present with the hardships of others can help her turn over a new leaf in her own life. But that's not easy. I take a very small measure of comfort in knowing that it's not supposed to be easy. At the High Holy Days, Jews are instructed to approach these huge, aching questions by going deep within. We are encouraged to focus on who we have been, who we are right now, and who we might be called to be. We're asked to repent for having missed the mark and to atone for the sins of our hearts and minds, our community, our race, our country, even our species. There's a formal progression to this ritual. Only after we look inward do we apologize. Only when we complete that process of self-reflection and making interpersonal amends do we turn to community-wide promises. These are actually spoken aloud by the whole synagogue in unison. It's very powerful. And only then do Jews consider themselves spiritually renewed, ready to be sealed or inscribed for the year ahead. But again, is it possible to do this, let alone with joy and relief, when the suffering of the world has not ceased or even slowed? I think it is, but it takes a very wide perspective. Like Jacqueline, I too grew up in a Unitarian Universalist and Jewish family. It has given me the feeling of straddling two unique histories, cultures, and worldviews. The blessing of being positioned in this way is that sometimes I glimpse a larger view. Here is what I have noticed. Unitarian Universalism is often concerned with whether the big themes in life, evil, salvation, responsibility, are supposed to be worked out individually or communally. Do people experience these themes as single, self-contained units, sharing them and their consequences with no one outside of self? Or should we view life's overarching questions in connection with our fellows, with an understanding about shared ownership, mutual impact? This worthy debate, there's a lot there to talk about, has been so present in our theological ancestry that it has become part of our identity. It's fused into our very DNA as a religious movement. I honor that. I have been formed by it. But, okay, here's the real talk. Judaism is ahead of us here in key ways. It has progressed further than Unitarian Universalism in working out some of the very questions and themes on which Unitarian Universalism flounders. We don't have to feel badly about this. Remember, Judaism has been contemplating life and its meanings for millennia longer. In comparison, Unitarian Universalism is in its infancy or adolescence. So what might we learn? I think Jewish wisdom has this to say to our Unitarian Universalist dilemma. philosophical issues like sin, like moral authority, like God, these are experienced both personally and collectively. Both are important lenses. But stopping there, as we sometimes do in Unitarian Universalism, is incomplete. The personal or individual reckoning must always be nestled within the collective or communal understanding, because they need each other, or else neither will ever truly be possible. Put another way, forgiveness cannot only be generated individually, because an individual hurt or harm wasn't hatched or expressed in a vacuum. It is always in relationship with the group, the culture, with the collective. By linking the personal with the group in our spiritual practice at this time of year, we understand enough about the world and our place within it to be able to begin again. These are Jewish ideas, but they are consistent with Unitarian Universalism. There's nothing here that doesn't fit with how I understand our principles and our purposes. Yet in my experience, we aren't always quite mature enough to get all the way there. It is simpler to argue about whether the personal or the communal matters more, because understanding the way the personal and the communal need each other, well, that's a big job. That's why Judaism developed the High Holy Days. Why the tradition created a process of figuring out how to honor this complex truth in ways that allow us to come to terms with the past and then begin again. As Unitarian Universalist observers, we might want to note that this is not a one-day event. It's a highly involved process requiring extensive time and awesome effort. And thus, the High Holy Days are often called the Days of Awe. I haven't forgotten Eilen, but I am plagued with that Unitarian Universalist confusion. Is the meaning of life collective or individual? How do I understand my connection to this dead child, to Syria and her people? Can I live my life without facing, in some way, people in peril? Can a High Holy Days practice of beginning again help us in this situation? Judaism reassures us that the personal and the communal are not so far apart as we might think at first glance. It encourages us to understand that the individual and the collective fit together so completely that they cannot actually exist alone. This is a simple framework, but it might be enough to help us begin again by bringing along the whole community, whether that community is a family, a congregation, a culture, a globe even. I alluded earlier to a source of inspiration, and now we have come to it. Recently, an Icelandic citizen shared publicly about her personal reasons for welcoming the presence of Syrian migrants in her country. I have no idea if this woman is Jewish. Knowing what I know demographically about Iceland, I think it's statistically unlikely that she is. Yet her statement sums up so perfectly the Jewish understanding that I recommend to Unitarian Universalism, about seeing one's own capacity to start afresh as fused with the beginning again of others. about total strangers, she says. They are our future spouses, best friends, the next soulmate, a drummer for our children's band, the next colleague, Miss Iceland in 2022, the carpenter who finally finishes the bathroom, the cook in the cafeteria, a fireman and television host. People of whom will never be able to say in the future, your life is worth less than my life. I find myself moved, practically to tears, by her invitation, issued not out of charity, but because of mutuality. She herself is ready to turn over a fresh leaf with these newcomers as their partners in marriage or band practice, home improvement or culinary adventure. All with people of whom we will never be able to say in the future, your life is worth less than my life. Maybe beginning again is bound to get harder as the years go by. I don't know. At the very least, it probably gets more complicated because our lives become more complex as we experience more of the world. At this time of year, or not, whether you're Jewish or not, the spirit of the High Holy Days calls us to plug into the interdependent web of which we are all a part. Our own impulse to start over, not separate from those same desires of someone, of everyone else. Who among us has never longed to start anew? We are all people who have erred. We are all people who have been damaged by circumstance. We are all people of whom we will never be able to say in the future, your life is worth less than my life. We begin again by turning inward. Sure, yes, always. But also by turning to each other to help make that possible. In this way, we are sometimes able to forgive ourselves and each other and begin again in love. What more can we do?